Welcome to Entrepreneurs of Playbook. I'm David Meltzer here live at the greatest stadium ever built. That's SoFi Stadium. It's amazing what about $6 billion we'll pay for these days. Nonetheless, we're blessed to be here bringing the biggest people to the biggest stages. And that is no exception now. Barry Oberholzer is here. He is the flying felon. He does more podcasts in the air than any other human on earth. He's bringing the greatest thought leaders, the greatest entertainers, billionaires, millionaires, and entrepreneurs up into the air to bring the best out of them so that we all can learn from those lessons of success, but more importantly, aligned with my brand, Made from Mistakes. 100%. Barry, welcome to the playbook.
Thank you, David. Nice to be here.
Well, first of all, why the flying felon?
So I started this after I got out of prison. So to rewind a bit, I was a...
I figured as much. You titled it. I got to figure it out. Exactly. Like the California kid, right?
I was a CIA operative for, and then other three-letter agencies for a long time. Then came into the U.S., did a lot of just startup business. I got involved in a company that there was white-collar crime in. I knew about it. Anyway, so we got a criminal case. I pleaded guilty, took my beating.
Did it work against you that you had the intelligence background? Because it made it really hard to say, I didn't know.
Yeah. Well, right. Well, exactly. So it was a bit of a tough one, but we did. So I spent my time in prison. I got a 15-month sentence. I spent 9 months of that. However, six of that 9 months I spent in special housing unit, which they call the hole. And then of that 6 months, I've spent about 5 days on suicide watch and then 97 days in solitary confinement. So when I got out of, so that whole journey is extremely tough on your mind, right? So you have a lot of time. And so it's...
Why were they so harsh on you? Was it because you were...
It was like because of my background and separating, I was supposed to go to a minimum security
Tennis courts.
Club Fed, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, no Club Fed there. I was in Club Fed for 6 weeks and then they transferred me over to a medium and then from a medium to like I was on Con Air. I did the whole journey. Right?
Yeah.
So I really like took everything that the BOP has. I experienced it. And so when I got out of that, I really had nothing left, right? So like when you have a felony, people just, especially a white collar felony, like it's very strange how people, like you can have a sexual assault or you can have a theft, but if you have a white collar felony and you try to get back into business, people, you're allergic, right?
And unless you want to run for president.
It seems to be 34 felonies.
Exactly. Yeah.
So my other route was go to the White House.
Right.
I either had that or go to the White House. And so I wanted to just bypass that completely, right? Instead of people just saying, oh, well, you're doing with him, but he's got a felony, or look at his Google results or whatever like that. I said, I really want to dive into with people that has been through it and then have made a success from it. And I'm going to take that brand to the people. And so we started with Flying Felon, but because there's 4 million other podcasts out there and there's 27,000 videos uploaded just hourly on YouTube on podcasts, right? And so the competitive landscape is extremely tough. And so I still had my helicopter license. They didn't take that away it wasn't a narcotics or a DUI conviction. And I decided, well, I'm going to start interviewing people while flying. And flying is very therapeutic for me. It's my hobby, it's my job, but it's also something that's very therapeutic. And I started linking up with celebrities and people like yourself in order to interview them and understand. We had Allen Iverson, we had Chuck Liddell, we had Bella Thorne, we had Tony Hawk, we had really big names in our first season. And just to sit next to them like this, and it's just, they're just people, right? But they've gone through all of the same shit that people go through, and understanding how did they get through it. And like the previous speaker just said, like, that's her experience. That's how she dealt with it, right? And so understanding how did you deal with it? And how did the other person deal with it? How did Allen Iverson deal with losing everything after he got divorced and addiction and blowing all his money, right? And so same with Tony Hawk, and the same with anybody else, like Nikki Bella, that had a broken her neck during WWE. How did she make a comeback at 40? And so all of those different aspects to it and understanding that. And so that's how the Flying Fill-In was born. And we're way over like 10 million views already combined. And like the second part of season one is being launched. And so I'm very blessed with that.
One of the things I love about the podcast and the lessons that are taught is a very difficult lesson for people to understand. I find it amazing because, you know, I lost over 100 million, including my mom's house. Mm-hmm. Only reason I wanted to be rich was to buy her house. Yeah. But I'm amazed how many people want my financial advice, not because I made 100 million twice in my life, but because I lost it.
Yeah.
And there's an aspect, though, about this vulnerability and transparency of our mistakes that allows us to decipher, well, that person wouldn't be someone that I want to be around. I say it all the time. Like, if they feel that way about me, then I don't want them as a friend. They're not a real friend, right? Like, I'll use real estate as an example. I buy real estate, I sell real estate, and I have a lot of family members and friends that are real estate brokers and agents. And some people have not been friends with my wife and I because we bought a piece of real estate and didn't use them. And I say, well, then they weren't my friend. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're not gonna be my friend because I didn't use you for a transaction, I think the same holds true that if you're not willing to forgive me for a mistake that I made that didn't even harm you, let alone harm you, then you weren't really my friend. So God's protecting me actually and promoting me from it. From all the stories that you had in the season, can you give me one of your favorite examples of somebody where the transparency and the vulnerability beyond your own story really paid off to promote, protect, love, and perfect him?
I think Lamar Odom comes to mind. We did Lamar Odom was our first episode we did. We were supposed to do Charlie Sheen on that day. And then 24 hours before Charlie Sheen canceled, he got some clause he signed with WME, not allowed to fly in a helicopter. And I did all my prep work.
Check out Tom Cruise. He loves flying helicopters. He loved being Jerry Maguire, by the way.
Yeah, exactly. And so I did all my prep work for Charlie Sheen. And like they said, sorry, he's not flying. And so we got Lamar Odom. And so now you need to keep in mind, Lamar was one of Kobe's best friends, right? Kobe bailed Lamar out of a lot of trouble in his life, gambling after NBA, et cetera. And Kobe died in a helicopter crash in Calabasas. And we fly that route over our show. And Lamar...
Am I on this show?
Lamar got there and he was sweating. And our producer had to really work to get him inside of the helicopter. It was also like 93 degrees. And it was just everything was working against us in order to make that episode happen. And then finally, like, he got in the helicopter. I told him, listen, like, we'll be good. Like, I need to come back. I've got a wife.
I'm good at what I do.
Five dogs.
So, I'm good at what I do.
Yeah, and we need to come back. So we went up, and as we flew down the coast and Santa Monica, and like we spoke about the fires and we saw everything over the Palisades, and he started to really open up about stuff. We flew over Staples Center, where it like obviously was with the Lakers, and so he started opening up and he started talking about things that he doesn't normally talk about on his interviews. And like, he's come back from having 12 strokes and 6 heart attacks after an overdose. And then coming back and actually learning to walk again from the start. That was like something that really like settled with me. And then the other one was also Allen Iverson. So like Allen Iverson, when he was done with the interview, he said, this was like nothing else I've ever done because we just spoke about life. And like, I'm tired of talking about basketball and like what I did. And when I played against Magic Johnson or when I played against Michael Jordan, it's just like all of these is the same questions. But I spoke to you about life. It felt, and then Tiffany Haddish said, it felt like a therapy session. Right. Yeah. And I think people talking to other people about people are not opening up. Like they like want to be guarded and very private, and especially in the LA and California, like greater LA area, is people like they're just like, I don't even know my neighbor, like your problem, my problem. We don't want to open up. And I think what from this show, opening up and just talking to other people, whether it's business advice from you, like, hey, I'm stuck, like I need to get, like, what's your advice to me? Or like, I was an addict, or like any of those different. And that's why I bring them on, is because billionaires, millionaires, all of them had to go through. And I love the title of your book, Don't Do Business with Dicks. I once sent an email to a board member saying, don't be a dick. And
yeah.
It really like created massive issue, right? And so but talking about to people about like open and transparency and like going through all of that business failures, and people come to you for financial advice, but you've lost them 100 million twice, right? So you know not how to do it. So
exactly.
How to not lose it. And so so now, like with the show, people understanding like, oh, okay, I know now what to do if I've got a narcotics addiction or a gambling addiction, or I went through a bankruptcy, or I went through a sports injury. Or so that's all of these different life lessons that we talk about in the show.
Yeah. And there are themes, common denominators, things that resonate with everyone. Interesting enough about Lamar, I've done over 2,600 just in the playbook alone, over 5,000 of office hours interviews. Lamar, out of 2,600 playbooks or more now with you, he's the only, because we interviewed him before recovery, the only interview I can't use. That's how high he was. And so to hear him recovered and to, you know, I thought, man, I should have him back and then just be able to use little blips of how insane. But he's someone, the reason he was having trouble is he had surrounded himself with dicks.
Yes.
Like the two guys that were with him, I would throw them out if they walked into this room. They're at the wrong frequency. In the essence of learning lessons, and you see, like I do, common denominators of alignment with what I call divine direction, but you also see common denominators of what people do to interfere with this unbelievable potential. You know, Tony Hawk's and Allen Iverson's, and Tony and I have been good friends. We grew up in San Diego, same age. My favorite story about Tony Hawk, real quick, people on the internet gave him so much shit because he was skateboarding with his baby with no helmet for himself. And so I commented, and this is how we became closer friends. I commented, I'm like, let me just tell you this. You know, as the leader of Lee Steinberg Sports and Entertainment, I go, I think that Tony Hawk holding a baby on a skateboard is safer than my wife walking with mine. And people fucking love that comment. But it was true. I trust Tony Hawk on a skateboard holding my baby more than my wife walking with the baby. But what is the common denominator of either divine direction or interference with our divine direction, our potential?
I think it was like a common denominator through everybody is that they accepted their position when there was that. There was a point in their life where like, okay, like I have this injury, or I acknowledge I have addiction, or okay, I screwed up with my bankruptcy. So, or I'm in financial trouble. Yeah, accountability is one of the biggest common denominators with all my guests. And so, and then building from there, right? The way back up is extremely hard, right?
Yeah.
It is extremely hard. And so it takes, like I could have chosen any type of guest, array of guests, right, on the show. But I'm specifically focused on redemption because I do believe, and comebacks, that that's a special human, right? That's a special DNA trait that you have, is the comeback. And because the fighting back is way harder than when we fell down.
And in the comeback, in the desire that you must be what you can be, for me, was an elevated awareness of faith.
Yes.
You know, God had always been a part of my life, but I was resistant to God, my God and not your God. But I believe God is omniscient, all-powerful, and all-knowing. And when we can accept through humility that protection with no evidence or evidence that's contrary to where we want to be, that faith and wisdom today are the two things that need to be utilized to get us and to allow us to redeem.
Yes.
Do these people all have some sort of faith?
That's a very interesting that you ask that question. My first comment to our producer at the end of our first season was, I didn't know that each one of these people believed in God.
Yeah.
It's 13 people that we interviewed, right? And without me asking them about it, every interview went back to like God, right? And how God helped them through it. And so Allen Iverson, Chuck Liddell, like I was talking to Chuck Liddell, and I was like, our kids went to the same school. And I was like, really? And so Chuck Liddell, Tony Hawk, even we had Louis Mancado from Breaking Bad on there. We had a Navy SEAL sniper that told his old story on our show and how he came to God. And so it was a common thread right throughout. And I was very surprised. I'm a man of faith. I believe in God. I'm not religious, but I'm a man of faith. And so I was very encouraged. And I was like, let's go for the next fucking season because I love this, right? It's about the story. Like, Jimmy Watson is the Navy SEAL sniper that was on our show. And he said, I just want to be the light. I just want to be the light for one person. If it's one person listening to the show and saying, because he went through suicide and suicide watches and all of the different stuff, crazy story, this guy, people dying all around him. And it's very visceral. And his only thing was if I can just be the light for one person, the show's a success. And so that really encourages me with just keep on people telling their stories without me prompting about it, but it just comes out very, very organically.
Yeah, there's a saying that changed my perspective when it came to faith and light in that respect was to realize that one particle of light will overcome a million particles of darkness in a scientific sense. And to be that particle is so essential to elevating and being closer to God, which is relative to giving and receiving, because most people don't understand the importance in receiving, which is giving somebody the ability to be able and capable of helping you. See, when people are able and capable of helping, they're closest to God. They're at their higher self.
Yeah.
And there's a long process and lesson about giving and receiving to have that faith. Fear. So what also makes the Flying Felon so entertaining to me is that helicopters evoke a relationship with their fear. No matter who you are, some people, they have no trauma to release and it's just very exciting. But you and I both know excitement and fear are the same frequency. If you don't believe me, go backstage in speaking, you'll see people that can't handle the excitement or people that can't handle the fear. And they're both interfering with your performance, by the way. I would rather you be excited than fearful, but they both are going to interfere the same way in your performance. You're bringing this element of fear, no matter what, into every interview. Not that there may not be enough already. Where have you seen people have to, you had mentioned, for example, Odom, right? You have to overcome his fear. How does fear interplay and how does it impact or is it relevant to the interview? Because you've elevated a frequency by putting people in a helicopter.
Yeah.
And you're a stunt pilot, by the way, too.
Yes.
Do you mess with people ever?
It depends on the guest.
You can mess with me. You can mess with me. I love that shit.
Totally depends on the guest. I like the first safety first and the comfort first. So, so for this season, what was very interesting is we had many guests that we had on our list to do. And I would say about 40% of that list were just no, because it's in a helicopter. I don't care.
And 20% of those, by the way, was because they know the Kobe story.
Yes.
Right? My wife doesn't like me.
No helicopter or, oh no, Kobe.
Yeah.
So that's why I was surprised we had Allen Iverson and Lamar Odom, right?
Right.
And so we had a part of the show where guests could choose. So we had this SWAT bench on the side. Our doors were taken off and we had a SWAT bench on the side so they could strap after the interview, decide if they want to strap themselves, take the bench and strap themselves on the bench and then I'll fly with them. Then I'll play around with them, right?
Yeah.
And good
B-roll.
Yeah. And then they can do pull-ups from this.
I'm in.
So we had this whole stunt team there and so we had, many guests there's no way I'm before the interview ask them because we need to prep the stunt team of they just want to get in the helicopter and then we want to strap them next to the helicopter outside afterwards. No. And I think 60% of the guests after the interview said, strap me in, let's go.
Yes.
And so we had, if you go on our show, The Flying Felon, on YouTube and on our Instagram, you'll see, all of these guests being strapped in on the side of the helicopter and doing all of that. We had Chuck Liddell with Tony Hawk, had a lot of fun. Nikki Bella did it. Black China did it. She did that plus the pull-ups. She was like, yeah, let's go. And so I think during the interview, it's the comfort that you create and the relationship you create with the guests, because they tell me during the interview, okay, yeah, I'll do it. And then I radio back to the stunt team to get ready. We always tell the stunt team, just be
ready.
Just sort of because they're going to change their mind, right? And so it's such an experience. I think the helicopter aspect to it overcomes that fear. And it's also how you, as a host, do the interview with the guests also what questions you ask. Like, I'm not out there to catch you out or on anything or talk about your affair or whatever, like, it might be, right? I'm there to, like, you open up to me. And I think, like, people opening up and overcoming that fear of, one, opening up, two, getting in a helicopter and flying. We had Nikki Bella as part of our pre-interview. She said, my biggest fears are flying and water. And I said, okay, let's go fly over the water.
Yeah.
So we took off and it was a perfect day. There was no wind. And we threw the canyon and she started talking and we came over and the canyon opened up over Malibu, north of Malibu. And I swing a left and there's this pot of dolphins just jumping out of the water. And I said, okay, I'll take you around. And so we took her around and she was like, you know, like, after this show, my fear of flying and my fear of water was just cured. And so it was like interviews, like doing that, and just people have a tendency to have a fear of, like I said earlier, talking about their own, like, it's like if they're embarrassed about talking about, like, their own problems and overcoming it. And so we just put everything together and then just let go and, like, one quick therapy session. And so that's, like, I really, really love to see that our people, celebrities, are just people like ourselves, right? So it's sure. Just so having them see that transition from very fearful, like, I'm not sitting on the side of a helicopter with Black China strapping herself in with a 12-inch stilettos hanging next to the helicopter and just, like, green air and just loving life. And so, yeah, that is very cool to see.
I cannot wait. I'll put Bob Marley's Redemption song in my background music.
Yes.
A testament to how powerful gratitude is, how powerful forgiveness is, how powerful accountability is, and, of course, inspiration, wisdom, and faith to stay inspired, to pursue our own potential, to release the traumas that cause the fears and the responses to those fears. Sometimes it takes flying with a felon to get you there.
Exactly.
But he does such a great job of bringing the best out of people so we all can learn from their mistakes, because we all are made from mistakes. Mm-hmm. Incredible. Mary, thank you so much for joining me.
We appreciate it.
I'm David Meltzer. This is Entrepreneurs, the Playbook.